Now.
About is Bleak.
Is that so?
Oh, so that is. I mean, just take a look around.
Bleak brought this from me a year ago, man. This is a rare out of print bird.
Look, I'm a delivery man making deliveries. And any static, take it up with Bleak.
Bleak, two E's, one K. Right now, I'd like to bring to the stage a fine musician, as well a very dear friend. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Bleak.
It's all coming together very slowly here. Stay tuned. Tonight on Exquisite Corpse Radio, the dawn of recording, the Julius Block Cylinders. And somebody's already on the phone? What's going on? You're going to have to hang on. All right. So to tell you a little bit more about what we're presenting tonight, let me just get right into it here. I can find my reading glasses, and I'm not sure I'm ready for this such an ambitious effort, but I'm going to give it a shot. The history of the Block Cylinders. Julius Block was born in, I don't know how you pronounce this, Pietermaritzburg, Natal, a British colony located in South Africa in 1858. He had hopes of becoming a musician. But his father, a wealthy businessman who represented two American trading firms in Russia, insisted that he not waste his career on music. Reluctantly, Julius capitulated. Block proved to be an outstanding businessman, and a fairly family business in Russia flourished under his leadership. But music remained an essential part of his life. It was under this confluence of music and business, linked with ingenuity, drive, persuasiveness and charm, that stimulated one man to create one of the world's most important surviving musical legacies. In 1889, the young entrepreneur Julius Block paid Thomas Edison a visit at his laboratory in Orange, New Jersey, in order to secure a phonograph. Block, an amateur pianist, had read about the tantalizing new invention in European newspapers and immediately recognized its amazing potential. A phonograph could preserve musical performances and capture oral history. Edison demonstrated the phonograph for Block, who eagerly asked to take one back to Russia. Edison agreed. Upon his return to Russia, Block demonstrated the phonograph to Tsar Alexander III and his family. Arranging this meeting was no small feat. The presentation was a resounding success. Intrigued, the Tsar asked to purchase a phonograph. Block wired Edison with the request, and soon Block personally presented the Tsar with his own phonograph, complete with a dedication plate from Edison. With this demonstration behind him, Block mounted a successful publicity campaign for his phonograph by organizing public exhibitions at the St. Petersburg Conservatory, the Moscow Conservatory, the Imperial Academy of Sciences, and other universities and scientific societies. These created a sensation, and there was a keen curiosity in many circles throughout St. Petersburg and Moscow to witness this new invention firsthand. Beginning in 1889, one of the earliest dates to record music, Block organized phonographic soirees, which resulted in his greatest accomplishment, documenting some of the most important artists and personalities of his time on cylinder. Within 10 years, Block was able to demonstrate his cylinder machine to, and in many cases record, numerous luminaries who lived and passed through Moscow and St. Petersburg. Pyotr Ilyich Tchaikovsky, Leo Tolstoy, Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, and Anton Rubinstein were among these, and each described his reaction to the phonograph in Block's Edison album. Tchaikovsky called it the most surprising and most beautiful and most interesting invention of the end of the 19th century. Tolstoy predicted the phonograph, like the printing press, would herald a new epoch in the history of humanity. Rimsky-Korsakov, with some foresight, saw the possibility of using the phonograph in a broadcast manner, adding... wait a second. Rubinstein saw the phonograph a boon to the performing artist for now their lamentations at their artist for now lamentations that their art is forgotten immediately after the execution are eliminated. He added in English, "Performers beware." This warning could, of course, mean that at least two things: the recorded music might take the place of performers, or that ephemeral memories of performances might be kinder than the harsh reality of recordings. Interesting. Skipping somewhere to the end here, Bloch, just to tell you what went on, Bloch went on to record many famous artists of his time, including Tolstoy and several others. A lot of these were thought to have disappeared. I'll get into that more later here. Many in Bloch's family believe that all the cylinders were destroyed during World War II, as his son Walter wrote in 1965. Unfortunately, the collections in Warsaw and Berlin were destroyed during the Second World War, but the collection in Bern is still preserved. Bern? Amazingly, many of the Berlin cylinders survived. They had been evacuated to... Silesia in 1944 to prevent their destruction. They were confiscated by the Russians after the war. The Berlin archive that originally housed the cylinders was located in what soon became Soviet-controlled East Berlin, and it disappeared behind the Iron Curtain. The cylinders themselves were eventually taken to Leningrad, where they came to be housed at the Institute of Russian Literature, more commonly known as the Pushkin House, outside the Soviet Union. Everyone assumed that the cylinders were forever lost. Interest in the Bloch cylinders occasionally resurfaced. Bloch's son, Walter, gave a copy of his father's memoirs to Yale University in 1965. The book contained detailed information about the cylinders. In the early 1990s, a small collection of 24 Bloch cylinders, together with photographs, papers, and ephemera relating to them, appeared and were auctioned in London. The noted New York collector Alan Koenigsberg, or Koenigsberg, could be, bought them and wrote an article about the Bloch cylinders in the Antique Phonograph Monthly in 1992. With Russia, musicologists were aware that the Bloch cylinders existed within Russia. In the 1990s, news began to filter out to the West about the lone Tchaikovsky cylinder, but only now has as the result of a chance discovery of the remaining cylinders in 2002, can the treasure of the Pushkin House be heard at all. That was written by John and John Anthony Maltese in 2008. We'll be hearing more from them in a while. Now, if everything works properly, we should be able to. I should be able to play for you some of the examples I have for you this evening of some of the Bloch cylinders. Now, there's three discs that Marston Records came out with a couple years ago. And we're going to be hearing one now. Should we hear... Sergei Taneyev is an artist that appears several times on the Bloch cylinders. Here's Sergei Taneyev playing Mozart's Fantasia in C minor on Exquisite Corpse. Let's hope this works. Thank you. And that recording, believe it or not, let me just bring this up for us here. From 1891. And that was Sergei Taneyev playing Mozart Fantasy in C minor. 1891 from the Block Cylinders. This is from the Dawn of Recording, the Julius Block Cylinders special tonight on Exquisite Corpse Radio. And when we talk about experiments in sound, which is a lot of what this show is about most of the time, we're talking now about some of the earliest experiments in sound, in actual sound, some of the groundwork for everything that came afterward. Edison himself didn't sign on to the idea of putting music on his cylinders when he was more interested in dictation devices and for things for business purposes and whatnot. So he was, some people claim Edison was a bit pig-headed when it came to that sort of thing, which is, I think it's kind of fair, you know. So here's a little, well, maybe we'll get into another track, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the history of the Block Cylinders and Edison recording. So, now, going also again from disc one, let's hear some Joseph Hoffman, playing Anton Rubinstein, Contra Dance A, number 3. On Exquisite Corpse Radio. And Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR 101.9 Vancouver. Joseph Hoffman playing Anton Rubinstein's Contra Dance A from number 3 from Les Bals. And tonight, the Dawn of Recording, the Cylinders from Julius Block, recorded in the late 1800s up to 1926 or so, I think it was. And some of the earliest recordings ever made, thought to be missing. They were the holy grail of recorded sound, and eventually found, nearly 100 years later. So, for me, I find that absolutely fascinating and completely intoxicating in so many ways. And because it is experiments in sound, and I love that sort of thing. This is part one of what will be maybe a two-parter of a show, I think, and we'll tell you more about that in the future, I guess. This track from Anna Esipovas now, from track by singing Godard, Gavette on G, Opus 81, Anna Esipovas on Exquisite Corpse. Thank you. Interesting, on many of the recordings you'll hear the announcements from the artists and sometimes Julius Block himself. And on disc number 3 there's a few spoken word tracks in which you'll hear Tolstoy, recordings of Tolstoy, can you believe that? And his wife and his daughter, which is an interesting tale in itself. I have some announcements to bring you, and then we should come back soon enough with some more of the Dawn of Recording, Julius Block Cylinders on Exquisite Corpse Radio.
The world is a wonderful and exciting place, and there are 1,000 exciting things to do without experimenting with music of your own.
This is Vicky from People Like Us, and you're listening to Exquisite Corpse on CITR 101.9 Vancouver.
On the dark, there's a highway, cool wind in my hair. Warm smell of colitas, rising up through the air. Up ahead in the distance, I saw a shimmering light.
Stop for a night with the King of Pop, Andy. Andy is coming to Vancouver Chan Center UBC Saturday, October 30th. Come for the biggest Halloween event this Saturday night. Bring your colorful dreams and diverse identities in any costume to Chan Center for a night of bilingual music and dance with legendary Andy Madarian, who is coming to celebrate multiculturalism in our Vancouver community. Check it out at chancenter.com.
You're listening to Exquisite Corpse, Canada's favorite radio show on CITR 101.9 Vancouver, the show that explores experiments in sound and avant-garde materials and what. Tonight, I've been thinking about doing this show for months, and I'm feeling a bit rushed. I didn't have a lot of time to prepare for this, but I've been thinking about this for a very long time, over a year, I think, thinking about doing a show like this, or based on this material. I thought, why not just go ahead with it? Just do it. If it doesn't work, we'll do it again sometime. I don't know. A little bit more on the Block Cylinders and the Dawn of Recording. A little more history on that, if you will. In 1889, in the months just after Edison perfected the first viable sound recording device, the inventor's agent, Theo Wangeman, inscribed a number of unique cylinder recordings of great musicians. Most famous is the legendary, some would say notorious, Brahms cylinder, on which the composer can be heard performing one of his own Hungarian dances. Played so much it was worn out long before it was copied onto a 78 RPM disc. That's good. Edison would have put that on a 80 RPM diamond disc, I imagine, unless another company got a hold of that first. Anyway, this earliest of all composer recordings is the object of controversy, with some claiming their remaining sound is so faint and distorted that it sadly reveals little of musical value, while others have written extravagant essays about Brahms' playing. Most of the other cylinders, incised by Wangemann, recordings of Hans von Bülow, Lilly Lehmann, Theodore Thomas, and other important musicians, have apparently been lost to history. Wangemann was not the only pioneer making celebrity cylinders. In his Berlin home, the prodigy Joseph Hoffmann recorded tenor Jean de Rezke. I'm probably slaughtering some of these names. Stay with me. And others in the early 1890s, while at the same time Polish-born novelist Joseph Conrad made cylinders of his friends Paderewski and soprano Marcella Sembrich, and a New York City doctor ensembled a library of cylinders that included several played by his friend and pianist Leopold Godowsky. These seem to have disappeared from history, too. At the same time in Russia, the far-sighted businessman Julius Bloch was recording cylinders. Consumed with interest in the newly invented phonograph, Bloch was determined to record and preserve the piano playing of pianist Anton Rubinstein. And alas, he never succeeded. It was a huge loss to posterity, but history owes Bloch a great debt for the many other cylinders he did record and which have miraculously survived. A remarkable 1922 letter from Edison to Bloch has also survived. Bloch had written to the inventor offering to send these cylinders to Edison's company so they could be preserved and even be issued. Edison's answer makes it clear he had no interest in Bloch's cylinders. Can you believe this? The history that it astounds me that Bloch was recording these amazing historical events, and Edison could not see the value. Among these Bloch cylinders were the earliest surviving recordings ever made of music by Bach, Wagner, Chopin, Schumann, Donizetti, Bizet, Tchaikovsky, Verdi, and others. There are also recordings by the composers Arensky, Taneyev, and Pabst. Paul Juon and Leo Konas were also captured playing their own compositions, and the singing and playing of musicians who created operatic roles and premiered major works by Tchaikovsky, Rimsky, Korsakov, Anton Rubinstein, and Rachmaninoff were preserved. Bloch's cylinders provide a unique glimpse into Tchaikovsky's musical circle with performances by 8 artists who had premiered his works, including his pupil Taneyev, who gave the premiere of the second piano concerto and completed the third concerto after Tchaikovsky's death. These are Taneyev's only recordings, and his 1891 cylinder enjoys the status of being the earliest surviving recording by a major soloist, if we agree that Brahms was not a major soloist. Okay, I don't know. Okay. Now, okay, let's just do this. Among the most satisfying cylinders that Bloch recorded are those of the Liszt pupil Paul Pabst, who died in 1897 at the age of 43. By then, Pabst's paraphrases of Tchaikovsky melodies were already famous. His 1895 cylinder of his own paraphrase of the Sleeping Beauty Waltz, which I have queued up, is probably the first great piano recording in history. Enjoying amazing sound quality that successfully showcases the grandeur and virtuosity of his pianism. No wonder that both Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff had dedicated compositions to him. The cylinder is a fitting tribute to his friend Tchaikovsky, who had died 26 months earlier. Together, Pabst recordings are a major addition to the discography of 19th century pianists. Obviously, a very great virtuoso in the Liszt Rubinstein tradition. Pabst's passionate reading of Schumann's Chopin section of Carnival might be the most lyrical Schumann playing ever captured. His cylinders, the only recordings of this neglected Liszt pupil, include the first known recordings of works by Chopin and Schumann. So, from Paul Pabst, playing from Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty, paraphrase on Sleeping Beauty, Opus 66. So, Paul Pabst playing Tchaikovsky now on Exquisite Corpse. I like that they left those the vocals and clapping in at the end, and some announcements at the beginning and end of some of these recordings are give it an extra human element. And we're hearing from people that died who recorded, let's just say that, recorded sometimes, well, in a lot of cases, almost 120 years ago or so. Amazing to me. And there's a note on the cylinders, a note on the discovery of the cylinders. It was quite a mystery that had to be unraveled and solved, in part by John Anthony Maltese, who wrote this column about the discovery of the cylinders. The discovery of these cylinders is, for my father and me, the culmination of a search that lasted more than 30 years. It is also an event of remarkable serendipity. We first learned about these cylinders in 1971 when I was 11 years old. The source, the great American violinist Eddie Brown, who was a friend of my father's. Brown made cylinders for Julius Block in Berlin in December 1914, and he told us that Jascha Heifetz had also recorded cylinders around the same time. Brown even exclaimed to have recorded duets with Heifetz. He and Heifetz had both studied with Leopold Auer at the St. Petersburg Conservatory in Russia, and also at Auer's summer school in Loschwitz, Germany, where Heifetz was stranded in 1914 at the start of World War I. For years, John Anthony Maltese goes on, my father and I tried to hunt down these cylinders. Years before meeting Eddie Brown, my father had asked Heifetz if he'd ever made any recordings before coming to the United States. Heifetz had nodded yes and said, in the old country. Perhaps these were the recordings he meant. Armed with Brown's story, he asked Heifetz producer at RCA, Jack Pfeiffer, if he had ever heard these recordings. He had not. Pfeiffer, in turn, asked Heifetz, who now claimed never to have made recordings before coming to the U.S., for some reason, if, in fact, he remembered making them. Maybe he feared that they would not end up to his exacting standards and did not want Pfeiffer to look for them. That's a theory. When Heifetz died, we examined his personal collection of recordings donated to the Stanford Sound Archive in search for clues. None could be found. When we published discographies of Heifetz, we mentioned Brown's claim that, in hopes that a reader might come forward with information about them. None did. Then, in early 2002, we began corresponding with Galina Kopitova, sorry about that, who lived in St. Petersburg, Russia. She was writing a book about Heifetz's boyhood years, and I sent her an email in which I mentioned the 1912 cylinders of Heifetz, adding, Eddie Brown told me about them years ago. They did not survive, as far as I know. Her reply on March 2 stunned me. Quote, I have information to add to Eddie Brown's in the Institution of Russian Literature, St. Petersburg, are stored wax cylinders recorded by Heifetz in 1912. The recordings were made in the apartment of Julius Block. Unquote. After picking myself up off the floor, I shot back an email asking for more details. On 10 March, she wrote back to say that she had visited the Institute and that, indeed, there were also recordings of Eddie Brown, and they had been made in Berlin. We had found the cylinders at last. 10 years later, Galina wrote with even more good news. The collection also included recordings by Joseph Hoffman, Anton Arensky, Elena Gerhardt, Arthur Nikisch, Leo Tolstoy, and others. She put me in direct contact with the Institute, better known as the Pushkin House, and I then traveled to St. Petersburg to see the cylinders for myself and to listen to them. The Institute expressed interest in publishing the cylinders, and I contacted Ward Marston, who comes into this story now, and his business partner, Scott Kessler, to secure their help. Together, we went back to Russia in 2005, met with the sound engineers at the Pushkin House, and returned with digital copies of the cylinders. Our friendship with Eddie Brown is not my only indirect link to Edison and these cylinders. When Block visited in 1889, my great-grandfather, Theodore Carman, worked for Edison in his laboratory. In fact, his young daughter Maria was one of the first to have her voice captured on record. Shortly after inventing the phonograph in 1877, my great-grandmother, just 8 years old, was visiting the laboratory when Edison asked her to sing into the device that would transform the world. Maria lived to be 103 years old, long enough for me to get to know her and to talk to her about growing up around Edison. The tin foil of her voice no longer exists, but the cylinders of Julius Block and the testimonials written about them are tangible documents that reflect the excitement felt by those experiencing the phonograph for the first time. As Tchaikovsky wrote in 1889, honor to the great inventor Edison. John Anthony Maltese, 2008. So this is the section of the story where Ward Marston comes into the picture. And we'll be hearing from Ward Marston soon enough here, so stick around. Let's hear something from, well, I think we should move on to disc two now, shall we? Eddie Brown, who we were just hearing about. Let's hear some of Eddie Brown's material on the Dawn of Recording CDs, the Julius Block Cylinders. So from around December 1914, let's hear the Haydn-Burmester minuet in F from Symphony No. 9, recorded December 27th, 1914. Listen to that. Isn't that amazing? That's the cylinder that really stood the test of time, I think. Really sounds good for being almost 100 years old, 1914 that was. And the fascinating stuff from the Julius Block cylinders. This is the Dawn of Recording special on Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver. And when you think about CITR and shows like this that give you something that you're not going to hear anywhere else and give it to you ad nauseum, I guess. Remember us during the fun drive and the passion that people put into these sort of shows and this whole radio station all together. And remember us. Think about opening your hearts and wallets and giving to CITR. Remember Exquisite Corpse when you give this year. Okay, so that's coming up soon. and I'm sure you've heard about this already. I'm going to, there's a lot of stuff that I need to be getting to right now, and a lot of those are messages. So, stick with me. I'm going to be playing a message, and I'm trying to find it. There it is. So I'll be back. We'll be hearing from Ward Marston after this message. He'll be telling us in his own words about the Julius Block cylinders and his role in the recording of the cylinders. So stick around, would you?
The 22nd Annual Vancouver Jewish Film Festival features a diverse array of films ranging from comedies, narrative features, and thought-provoking documentaries. The festival runs from November 9th to 18th. Be sure to check out films like Breaking Upwards, a quirky romantic comedy about a young New York couple who intricately strategize their mutual breakup, or The Beetle, a funny mockumentary about the film director's obsession with his 40-year-old Volkswagen Beetle and his effort to restore it. He finds himself on a journey meeting previous owners who tell remarkable stories about the car, and the journey ends with the birth of his first child. Don't miss the 22nd Annual Vancouver Jewish Film Festival, November 9th to 18th, sponsored in part by CITR 101.9 FM. For tickets and a complete listing of films, visit vjff.org.
All right, Exquisite Corpse, Canada's favorite radio show on CITR. Today we're looking at the beginnings of sound experiments. There's another episode of this type of show I'm going to be doing in the future. It's going to be talking about the earliest recordings ever made. It's going to take me some time to build up material for that and get everything in position. So stick around. This is part one of the, what do you call it, the sound, the holy grail of sound. Something that thought was lost for generations and turned up again. Here's Ward Marston from Marston Records talking about the Julius Block cylinders now.
Hello, this is Ward Marston again with another video preview of one of our new projects. This is our newest project, which will be available at the end of November, and it is a 3-CD set, and we have chosen to call it The Dawn of Recording. Now, most of you who know about my work in the field already know that I deal with very early records, and we've released many recordings from 1902, 1903, 1904, 1905, and all the early times, the days of the 20th century. But these recordings predate any commercial recordings by at least 10 years. And it's a fascinating topic, and I'd like to just give you some idea as to what will be contained in this 3-CD set and how it all came about. First of all, I must talk about the man who made them. His name is Julius Block. He was born in 1858. He was born into a family of business people. His father was a very successful businessman, international businessman, and Block took over his father's company in the 1880s, and he had dealings in Russia, and Germany, and Austria, and England, and America. And sometime in the late 1880s, probably in 1889, Block began to read in newspapers about this new invention called the phonograph, which was basically was captivating audiences, because Edison had begun to demonstrate the phonograph publicly, and it was being written up in newspapers all over the world. Block made a trip to the United States for some business purposes, and he decided to visit Edison in the laboratory, in Edison's laboratory in West Orange, New Jersey. And when he went to see Edison, Edison had no particular interest in meeting Block, but finally he agreed to meet with him. And over the next few hours, Edison demonstrated the phonograph to Block, and Block became obsessed about owning a phonograph. By the end of the day, Edison had agreed to provide Block with a phonograph and some blank cylinders, and immediately Block sailed for Russia, where he was really living. That's where his headquarters was at the time. He had an apartment in Moscow and a house in St. Petersburg, and his primary business was in Russia. As an incidental remark, Bloch introduced such important novelties as the bicycle and the escalator to Russia at this time. And he also wanted to introduce the phonograph. Edison had the idea of marketing the phonograph as a dictating device for office use. And Edison really didn't have any particular idea of making recordings of music. Bloch, however, had a much deeper vision about the phonograph and its use. And Bloch, he was an amateur pianist himself, and he knew a lot of musicians in Russia. He was friendly with Tchaikovsky, he was friendly with Anton Rubinstein, he was friendly with Arensky, Taneyev, a number of important singers and violinists, and he decided when he brought the phonograph to Russia that he would invite people to his house and make cylinder recordings of famous musicians, either playing the piano, singing, or playing the violin. He saved these recordings and guarded them very carefully and preserved them, and really was very cognizant of their historic value. Bloch died in 1934, and subsequently his family donated this collection of rare cylinder recordings to an archive in Berlin. Now, everyone believed that these cylinders had been destroyed during the war with the bombing of Berlin, but it turned out that the Soviets removed the cylinders for safekeeping and took them to St. Petersburg, where they were housed at the in a building called the Pushkin House in St. Petersburg. But in the West, no one knew where they were until very recently, and everyone who knew about the collection, including Bloch's family, believed that they had been destroyed. Bloch's son had published in the 1960s a memoir written by his father, and in the introduction to that memoir, Bloch's son indicates that the cylinder collection had definitely been destroyed. So we are pleased to announce to the world that it is safe in St. Petersburg, and we traveled to St. Petersburg to supervise the transferring of these cylinders to a digital domain. Now, what is on these cylinders? Well, we're issuing about 90 of them. Some of them are piano, some are violin, and some are voice. And the sound of the cylinders is remarkable for the period. So what is on these cylinders? Well, they contain piano recordings, violin recordings, and some recordings of singers. And many of the musicians recorded by Bloch during the 1890s never made records. For example, there's a famous pianist who was a well-known pupil of Liszt, whose name was Paul Pabst. And Pabst died before commercial recording was a reality, so there was no way that Pabst could have made records. And some of the Pabst cylinders made by Bloch are among the finest sounding recordings in the entire collection. And I've decided to play a little clip of Pabst playing a bit of his paraphrase, his piano paraphrase of the waltz from Tchaikovsky's Sleeping Beauty. Who made three Bloch cylinders was Josef Hoffmann. These are Hoffmann's earliest recordings and made when he was just about 20 years old. And they're fantastic records as well. And there are a number of great musicians represented in this collection, and I urge you to go to our website where you can see a complete listing of the contents of this album, this 3-CD set, and you can read biographies of the musicians, and you can read also a history of the Bloch collection and a biography of Julius Bloch himself. This collection is the earliest collection of classical music recordings ever made. There are only a couple isolated examples of classical music recordings that predate this, for example, the Brahms Cylinder from 1889. But this body of recordings actually sounds much better than the Brahms Cylinder, and you can really hear a great deal more music on these cylinders. Bloch was the first enthusiast to make private cylinder recordings, and he was followed later in the 90s by Gianni Battini, who made recordings of famous singers, and of course Lionel Mapleson, who recorded some live performance excerpts at the Metropolitan Opera House between 1901 and 1904.
Of course.
But I hope that you'll enjoy this 3D this 3-CD set, and I think, as I said before,
yes,
this is the most important project that we have issued to date, and I urge you to read our website and to purchase a copy of The Dawn of Recording.
So that was Ward Marston from Marston Records. He was, like he told you who he was, and gave you a lot of the information that I've already given you, maybe in a more concise way, I don't know. But I just wanted to drill that into your head a little bit more. But from Ward Marston himself, I really enjoy that, hearing that. And I don't know if you're getting this from me, but this stuff is fascinating to me. And I think it's a gold mine, a treasure trove, the holy grail of recorded history. And here it is. They found it after about 100 years. Let's hear. I'm not sure that... Well, here's Yascha Heifetz. He's playing a track by... I never knew how to pronounce this. Is it Cui? C-U-I? I know I sound like a dink. But the Oriental from Kaleidoscope, Opus 50, from November 1912.
Thank you.
Yasha Heifetz and Valdemar Lychowski. Does that sound right? I don't know. November 1912 from the Block Cylinders. The dawn of recording on Exquisite Corpse Radio tonight, and a squeaky chair just thrown in for you, no extra charge. Now, okay, well, let's. Well, I got some more messages to give you. This time is really speeding by. So, okay, why don't we go to some messages, and I'll come back and we'll return with the dawn of recording on Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He creates this outcry, this clamor. He creates this nightmare of noise.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He's a sonic mess, basically. The discordant notes are just a hubbub, a cacophony.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
He creates a disturbance because he's basically disturbed.
If it makes noise, it has some merit.
Basically, this is a worthless racket. The man is mentally incompetent.
For the most ear-splitting forays into noise, prog, early industrial, no wave, plunderphonic, psych, and altogether way out sound, tune into A Noise with your host Luke Meat every Wednesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM. A Noise, music that isn't in its right mind.
And this is Exquisite Corpse Radio, special presentation this evening, the dawn of recording, the Block Cylinders. A lot of music recorded in the from 1889 to, I think it's 89, to about 1926. I'll have to look that over. We have music from Conus now. Conus and Sergei Taneyev, I guess Mr. Marston pronounced it Taneyev, something like that, and Leo Conus from December 1893. This is a suite for piano, four hands, on Exquisite Corpse and the Dawn of Recording. Thank you. Okay, some more tracks from Disc 2 from the Dawn of Recording, the Julius Block Cylinders, and we're going to be hearing now first movement, Allegro Moderato, from December 1894, Anton Arensky, piano by, let's see if I can do this, Jan Rimali and Anatoly Brandukov. And first movement again, Allegro Moderato from Arensky on the Dawn of Recording, Exquisite Corpse.
Thank you.
They're very scratchy, and many, many decades old. That was Anton Arensky, a piano trio number one in D minor, first movement, Allegro Moderato from the dawn of recording. Again, let's hear a track, another track from disc two of the dawn of recording. Joseph Press with Michael Press. And do I have a date on this one here? I don't have it written on my file, but I can find it. Let's just hear the track now. So let's make an attempt here at pronouncing this correctly. Joseph Press and Michael Press. Still bad accent, right? Where is that? There should be a date right on here. Oh, it's funny, I don't see it. Most of the recordings do have dates on them, and I'm not seeing one on this one. I'm just seeing the dates of the artists. Joseph Press, born 1881, died 1924. Michael Press, 1872 to 1938. And Joseph played cello, and Michael played the violin. There you go. Let's hear some messages and be back in a moment.
Life is hard. The world is cold. You're always too young and then too old. But we've changed all that. Escape from life at the new Waves on How concert series, where you're never too young or too old to rock out with Vancouver's most amazing bands each Friday and Saturday night from 8 p.m. till midnight. Sponsored by Covenant House. Come enjoy the show and donate to Covenant House's Street Youth Services Program. Join the Waves on How Facebook group for all the info. Waves on How is not responsible for smiling, laughing, singing, dancing, or sudden outbursts of complete happiness that may be caused by the Waves on How concert series.
One life begins. Oh, and here we are again at Exquisite Corpse Radio on Canada's favorite radio show. It just might be time to move to disc three. This is part one of what could be a short series, which will continue maybe monthly. I'm not sure yet. We'll have to figure out what the timing of this special. This is I think this deserves more than just one outing. There's a lot of tracks on this this fascinating release of three discs of many different artists. On disc three, we hear more vocals. It's the vocal disc, as they put it. Mademoiselle Nikita, who was Louisa Margaret Nicholson, 1872 to unknown. She could still be out there, for all I know. Soprano and Pyotr Shurovsky on piano, and they did a few tracks on here. She was evidently quite the popular soprano of her day, and completely forgotten for 100 and some years until these recordings were made available again, were found and made available again. So let's hear tracks from these people now. La 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 la. Here, let me just, it's going to take me a minute here. Okay, Nikita, there you go. Let's hear a track. She's singing from Verdi. Ernani in Volami from Ernani. And, again, pardon my bad pronunciation. Here's the announcements. Thank you. 1K from the vocal disc of the Dawn of Recording. Nikita. Mademoiselle Nikita or Louisa Margaret Nicholson. Soprano. And that was 1890. And a track that she sang from Verdi's Ernani. And we've got more of the vocal tracks we're going to be playing for you eventually here. The spoken words from Leo Tolstoy himself, which is fascinating because, you know, nobody probably listened to this, the voice of Tolstoy, for 100 years or so until they found these recordings again. I find that miraculous in many ways. A lot of these names I do have trouble pronouncing, so if you'll bear with me. Lavrenti Donskoy, tenor and unidentified pianist. This is from 1894, a track from Rubinstein's. Piece from Rubinstein's Nero from 8 November. So let me just find this for you. You're listening to Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR 101.9 Vancouver, and this is our special presentation, the Dawn of Recording, like I keep telling you. All right. Am I going to find this now? Here's where the show falls apart. Okay. Let's see. No, just having trouble because I got this on a computer and I'm trying to relay it to this other. Anyway. Rubinstein, as sung by Lavrenti Donskoy on Exquisite Corpse Radio.
Oh,
Sort of fell apart at the end there, didn't it? Okay. Well, thanks for listening to our special presentation of the Dawn of Recording, the Julius Block Recordings, number one. We'll be hearing more of this at a later date to be figured out. I'm going to play for you now something that I found completely fascinating that I needed to hear right away as soon as I got these things. Leo Tolstoy, with his wife, Countess Sofia Andreevna Tolstaya, and later on they recorded at the tail end, I guess, Tatyana Lvovna Tolstaya I can't do this. Anyway, the daughter of Tolstoy, later on, at the end of the disc, I guess. So this first recording on the cylinder was made in 1895, and the added parts were made in 1927. So, all right, so listen to this. And remember, until next week, the future is bleak. Stay tuned for Thunderbird Radio Hell next. On this fine radio station. All right, here we go. Is this it? No, I had it before on the other track. All right, here we go. Good night.